Remember to use your mics, guys.
John Schaefer, Vice Chair, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jim Malinowski, Board Member.
Mark Daniels, Board Member.
Neil Chambers, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jim Pearson, Railroad Advisory Board.
Randy Williams, BYCX.
Doug Auberg, BYCX.
Jerry Jacobus, trying to get on the Advisory Board.
Marvin Matheson, I'm a neighbor of the, at Holman.
Michael O'Connell, former property owner and railroad supporter.
Steve Jagelski, property owner.
Jerry Garden, of his work, back up.
Sue Marshall, counsel.
Rocky Houston, Clark County.
Kevin Tyler, Clark County, and online we have Maggie Dirk with the City of Vancouver, John Hanson, Railroad Advisory Board Member, Kim O'Hara, Community Member, Mark Hersig, City of Battleground.
That's all? Look, there's more names up there.
Well, Jim Malinowski's online and in person. And then the other extra phone number is just the room here.
Okay. So we've got two online members?
Yes.
Six, eight. And eight people. Okay. I have just one comment to make. I think we talked about it last time that the planning, community planning group was going to hire a consultant to do the implementation of the 5517 freight rail dependent use. And that was to be voted on by council at a recent meeting, but that was withdrawn from approval and not even voted on during that council meeting. So we now have nobody that's going to be implementing it at this point in time. And I assume that's because of all the issues surrounding what the operator is doing at this point in time. Other than that, I don't have anything to say, so
minutes.
Go ahead.
You have minutes. Minutes.
Oh, the minutes, yes. I actually read the minutes cover to cover this time. Anybody else read the minutes?
I move that we accept the minutes as written.
It's been moved and seconded that the minutes be approved as distributed. Anybody opposed to that? Anybody online opposed to that? The minutes are approved as written. There's no one here from PVGR, and I assume there's nobody online from PVGR.
I do not see anybody.
Okay.
Have we got any car counts?
We did get a car count for January through February. I have not seen March yet, and I'll ask him for that, but it was comparable to last year. At this time.
Can we get those?
Yeah, I can send those.
Okay, Randy, you want to talk about BYCX?
Thanks, Dan. Right now, we're doing basically mechanical work, deferred maintenance on the diesel, and guys are working on the weekends up there on that when they have time. And of course, we're trying to get our steam engine put back together so we can run it this summer if we get some track. We've got a group of anxious volunteers that are working on the coach, giving it a major facelift inside, but fixing some of the upholstery, updating the bathroom a little bit, making it a little bit easier for people on a walker to get in, paint, like I said, upholstery. So they're going through the cars and getting them ready. Again, it's hard for us to work on them during the season, run season, because it usually have to tear them up so bad to get anything done. The open car, which we board when we get on, passengers board from the depot onto that car, then go to the other ones. It's getting some floorboards replaced, seat frames painted, new seats, new railings. So that's the kind of work we're doing right now, weather permitting. Our concern, of course, is the fact that Bridge 25 is out of service. That's the first bridge. We started milepost 26.7. So Bridge 25 is a mile and three quarters down the track, and that's not much of a ride. That was determined by the county's consultants to be defective and had to be taken out of service, as well as the rock slide that's around milepost 23.8 that Kevin and Doug and I went out and looked at. We're evaluating right now if we can take care of the rock slide. We bought a new crane, and it has to have some maintenance done on it, but it's big enough, we believe big enough, to go out and take care of that. We have one of our volunteers is a crane operator, so I'm going to run him down, and either he's going to go down his speeder, or I'll run him down on my speeder, and we'll go down and evaluate it. But between the backhoe and the new crane, see if we can pick the rock up and move it down and drop it off on the uphill side of the track so it's safe. Because it's quite a drop off where it's located at. But we've got some gullies a little farther down the track that we can plop it into. So that's what we're working on right now. We're waiting to find out from Kevin, hopefully a little bit more of a timeline. Our monthly meeting's tonight, so I want to make sure I have good data that I can share at our meeting. Anybody have any questions? Do you have anything else to add? Oh, one other thing. We're still working on our maintenance building in Yakult. Doug's been working with a contractor that PVJR is familiar with, and he seems to be a decent guy as to what we can build with the money we have left from the state grant because of inflation. Obviously, it's tore into our building pretty bad, but he had some suggestions of what to do that would facilitate us to be able to go after grant money for certain projects. Like if we want to do maintenance in the building, we have to have sprinklers. So otherwise it's just a storage building. We can't do any work in it. So those are things that we've been working on as well. If that's it, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, Kevin, you want to tell us about county activities?
Yes, sir. So to kind of follow up on what Randy was just talking about, bridge repairs, we have the bridge repair project advertised officially as of last week, April 3rd, and bid opening is scheduled for April 23rd. And that does include, we added the slide removal to that contract. And so that and Bridge 25 were identified as priority first order of work. It does take the county some time to get under contract after bids are received. And so, you know, the start of construction is still anticipated to be in the summer. So we can get you an update on what that timing is as soon as it's available and just kind of keep that communication going. And see, the railroad roadbed rehabilitation project, field work started, XL Tech performed track inspections on first set of tracks up through, I think they went up to Yakult. And so the second set of field work where they'll do the investigation further north up to Chilachi is being scheduled, should be in the next couple of weeks. The railroad bridge management plan was sent to the Federal Railroad Administration. We're waiting to get comments back from them. The initial load rating analyses have been completed, and we're reviewing those internally. And the one highlight that I think, you know, Randy already spoke to is that Bridge 25 has some defects where the consulting firm KPFF recommended that it not be used under the loads that would be with a standard locomotive. Both they evaluated it, both locomotives that BYCX uses and the locomotives that if PVJR were to use it, and all three fail under normal and maximum rating, so that's not good news, right? So the good news, though, is that the bridge repairs that we've identified solve that problem, and so as soon as those repairs are made, the bridge can be put back into service. We'll also address the defects in Bridge 23, and so then that'll be open as well, and hopefully further down the line, 18 and 20. So looking forward to those projects being constructed. Load rating analysis results, we'll continue to circle through internal review before we are able to make those public. And then the last update was just what Dan told you, which was that the freight rail dependent use consulting firm was pulled from the agenda at council's last meeting. And I don't have an update on if it's coming back or what the status is. So Jose Alvarez with community planning is giving us updates when they're available. So I'll let you know when we hear more about that. Any questions for the county?
When you put out the bid for the roadbed rehabilitation, are you going to be able to put in language such as you know, the source for ballast material needs to be a locally permitted source? I mean, Eric has already said that he's going to crush railroad ballast, and I'd hate to have all the neighbors go crazy because he's crushing up there, and then when they ask who's buying it, and you got to say it's the county. could you tell me ahead of time so I can be out of time?
What I do know is when we bid projects like this, we, you know, there is a requirement that all the sources of the material are approved by our construction manager. So that's, we would be agreeing to the source before it's delivered to the site, so it has to meet spec before.
Yeah, you should probably give them heads up in the bidding documents so they don't go right, because Eric's going to say, hey, I'm approved.
Yeah, well, there's no mining approved up there at this point, so I mean,
he's going to say I'm federally approved. I'm going to down in Vancouver. That should be right. Yeah.
Kevin, did the repair contract include the repair of the Heisen crossing where the motor vehicle accident was?
It does not. The plans and specifications do not include that at this time. Either we'll work to pull, like, to put together a change order to include that into the contract, or I will pursue a separate contract to get that repair done.
That's probably going to be a rip out of the intersection and replace the ties. I think ties are bad under there.
Yeah, we just evaluated it. I had a couple of construction companies go up and take a look at it, and they're just evaluating the part that's the damage that's done up next to the road, and if they can splice a piece of rail in and repair it that way. So I got two bids based on that. I need a third bid, and then I can pursue it, or we put it into that contract to have it done. So one of two ways.
Say, Kevin, when you have these contractors out and they do tie projects, things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're contracted, are they contracted for the disposal of those ties too, or are they left to us?
Yes, they are. They are contracted to dispose of the ties as well. Yeah.
Are there any new grants coming up that we're going to be bidding on, proposing on?
I've been working with our transportation staff to do to potentially put together a grant for, and I can't remember the grant name off the top of my head, but it's through the UTC. And that would be like great. I think it's the Grade Crossing Protective Fund. So it's to make, you know, incremental improvements to existing crossings, like changing out the gate max or installing new lights, you know, things of that nature. So the transportation team is putting together a list of crossings and what would be needed at those crossings, and then we're going to try to pull together some costing estimates and see what we can do to put in for one of those.
Dan, I did mention earlier to Kevin that I sat in on a presentation for, what is it, grants, federal grants, and it was pretty interesting. I don't have the presentation yet, but I'm going to get it, and I will pass it along. You know, they mentioned there's a substantial amount of money out there. Some of the people in the room had already put in for, you know, put in for some over the years, and, you know, millions, you know, multi-million dollar type projects on short lines out there. And, I mean, it certainly includes all program work, you know, tie work, rail, bridges. It was mentioned that if you're going to put in for one of these grants, that, you know, you might want to wrap everything into, you know, one big project and then see what sticks, I guess, you know. And then I did ask him about security, things like that out there, because I know that we have had in the past some security issues. They do have grant money for that. They don't have grant money available for, say, individual patrolmen or anything like that out there. But if, you know, if you're looking at putting in security fencing, cameras, things of that nature, they said that was, you know, that was something you could put in for. And then, like I mentioned before, there's locomotives out there that, I don't know, they've got all the way up to like sixth generation, which is a fully electric, but there's one right underneath it, which I would have been interested if I was buying a locomotive, but I'm not in the market for a locomotive. But these federal grants will pay up to 80% for these locomotives. And, you know, even though we've talked about how environmentally friendly railroads are, these locomotives make it even more environmentally friendly out there in getting to that zero emissions type of thing on there. So like I said, they will, if you get one, they will pay 80% of that cost. I don't know what the cost of a new locomotive is out there, but, you know, maybe the state or somebody, you know, or somebody would, you know, you could get the extra 20 out of Homer. I mean, we talked about lobbying. That would be an ideal thing to lobby the state for, Department of, you know, WSDOT on there. But anyway, I will get that to Kevin or anybody interested. A lot of good numbers on there. And I think in this, I'll say a grant season, I think May is kind of a, you know, it's kind of a short turnaround on these things. So, you know, I don't know if you got any fancy grant writers that, you know, can dust something off. You might get something out of them. Or if you don't get it this year, you know, it'll be there, you know, they'll be there next year. So it's, you know, in future, maybe capital planning or whatever. Anyway, I will get that to you.
Good. Jim?
Yeah, I just tag on to that. You know, from an energy perspective, we should emphasize the fact that you can move freight for 10 on rail for 10% of the energy you can on trucks and on the roads. And the road the maintenance costs for rail, we should be doing everything we can to build up our rail systems, not abandon them. And so it seems to me that if the county is going to push this idea, and I know the city of Vancouver is pushing the idea of energy independence and getting off fossil fuels, one of the best ways to do that is rail. And it's really important from an energy perspective that we start doing the things that make sense. And building up the rail system of the United States and locally, I think, should be part of that solution.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, unfinished business. We do have some candidates for Railroad Advisory Board. John, I'll let you address that a little bit. We need to start looking at that. One of the things that John and I were, I guess, puzzling about is that we're kind of in a position right now where we can't tell new candidates what's going on with the rail because we don't know. It's kind of in abeyance. I mean, it is continuing to go forward, but it's has some hiccups in it that that need to be dealt with before we can say that it's a great thing. Do you have anything else to add to that, John?
Doing good, Dan. Well, I think what we talked about was you know,
if my kids
involved. Well, my voice carries.
Not to the people that are at home.
Well, you know, normally when we interview people for position on the board, it's a pretty upbeat meeting. You know, we've always been on a trajectory where we're getting more and more money for the rail. We're bringing more and more business onto the rail. You know, we've accomplished quite a bit. And when we come to the point now where when Dan says we have a couple of hiccups, there are more than a couple of hiccups. We've got an operator that has the federal government breathing down his neck. We have a lot of neighbors that are very upset, and we've been getting an awful lot of bad press. And you know, and so, you know, now may not be the time to be adding more people to the board. Now may be the time to, you know, sit back and assess and see which way this thing is going to go. You know, the county just backed out of, and I don't know how long they backed out, but they've stopped the progress on bringing on somebody to implement 5517. And without 5517, the development of the railroad stops at about 119th Street. So all the Lagler, all the stuff around north of Winco, that's off the board. There's really not a whole lot out there that we can really be pushing. Our rail is in pretty good shape between here and Battleground, but it's going to be hard to secure any funds going north of Battleground when, one, we've got a problem up in Chelatchee, and two, any grant that we apply for is going to be opposed. And we've never had anybody ever oppose our grants. You know, and just like this sales tax exemption that was like this close to passing last year. Matter of fact, Amber said it was just a technicality that they wanted to come back this year and fix. And they came back this year and it passed the House 95-0. And it got to the Senate, and the environmentalists jumped in, friends of Clark County and their buddies, those guys, FutureWise, got onto it, and all of a sudden, that $2 million a year went from $1 million a year, went to $500,000 a year, went to zero. So, and I'm not sure that we're going to get a grant as long as there's active opposition to any grant application we make for the railroad. So we're in a spot, boys. You know, there's money out there, but I don't know if we could be the successful guys to get it right now. So
you know, step one, you know, we're talking about an open house, you know, along the same line. I've had open houses, and the successful ones are where you can answer every question they got positively. And I mean, not, you know, a positive answer to each one. And we got some questions out there that we can't answer positively. You know, when they say, can you guarantee me that Eric isn't going to put an asphalt plant next to Lauren Middle School? We can't do that. You know, and you get one of those questions and your whole open house goes out the door. You know, I've been in meetings where there's been 300 people and me, and they're all on the other side, and that's not a place you ever want to be. And, you know, so, and if we just, you know, if we just go ahead and, you know, try to get our pom-poms out and say, go railroad, we just look like Eric's shills. And I'm not going to do that because, what is recorded? I'm not very happy with Eric, you know.
As far as the grant is concerned, I just put it out there.
No. No, and I said this at the last meeting too. Meeting before you came up, this is nothing new. I mean, I see. I want us to get that money. You know, I want us to build this railroad out, and I want it to be successful. I want to bring in as much business as we can because I think that it is a good thing for Clark County. I think this could be a boon for Clark County. I think it can be a boon for Battleground School District. And, you know, it's great. It covers three legislative districts. It's, you know, something we can get things done in Olympia, but we can't do it while we got an outlaw sitting out there.
And I do, I mean, I mentioned the grants. Me personally, yeah, I think it's you know, I look at it as an opportunity, I guess. Maybe you look at a cups apple or whatever on there. I think it is an opportunity. I do agree with you in the sense that, maybe it would be nice if Eric communicated with us a little bit more about what's going on. I mean, I read the Friends of the Clark County. It's a long read. At the end of the day, it looks like the EPA is running the show out there. But we neither hear from EPA nor do we hear from Eric. You know, it's like, I don't know. Where are we at?
Yeah, I get the letters. I get a lot of extra letters and, you know, and I get a lot of pictures, and the pictures show that even though there's a cease and desist order, that work is still taking place out there. Now, you got to have big cojones to, you know, to violate a EPA cease and desist order. So, you know.
Here it comes again, front page of the Ridgefield Reflector.
Yep. So that's kind of what Dan and I have been talking about is like, you know, how do we get this board to the point where we finally can get traction again? Because we really have been spinning our wheels here for a while. And we can get traction and start pushing this thing forward, or we can start, you know, we're always going to have people that are against the railroad. We're always going to have people that are going to be against development in Clark County. But the vast majority of them want to see progress. And at least I believe that. And if we can get to the point where we can start getting that thing moving, you know, then we can start put our shoulders into it and start pushing this ball forward. But right now, we're kind of in a spot. Dan?
No, it's an awkward spot to be in. I mean, I've been working at this for 20 years, and I felt like every year we've made a little bit of progress. It's a hell of a lot slower than I wanted it to be, but it has been progress, and I feel like we're taking a few steps backward now, or being pushed backward. I'm not sure which it is, and it's just a difficult spot to be in, and it's hard for me to go out and, as John said, you know, flip your pom-poms and say, hey, let's go with the railroad. It's still a good thing for Clark County. There's no question about it. And what we can do about it, I don't know. And it's going to have to turn a lot of people around because you see all the comments that come in are all negative. I did see one come in that was positive, but it's just it's a tough road right now to push this forward. And I don't know what all the background is, but they pulled hiring the consultant to implement 5517, but obviously there was some reason that the council decided not to go forward with it. So it's, we're kind of in a push comes to shove, and that all comes back to the fact that how do you excite somebody to join the Railroad Advisory Board when we don't know where we're going and what we're pushing against?
Yeah. I mean, the city of Battleground unanimously passed a resolution against the implementation of 5517. That's how far we've sunk. You know, something that was going to give the city, or, you know, Battleground School District millions of dollars, and they're all saying, no, thank you.
I think this gentleman back here was talking to the school board, the Battleground School Board. Didn't you talk to the school board?
I did talk to a member, yes. And it was pretty much negative.
Yeah, and when John and I talked to him a few years ago, the superintendent and the vice superintendent both were absolutely in favor of it, and they even wrote us a letter supporting the railroad at that time. And so now that's all turned negative, because they could see there's a lot of money coming out of industrial property, converting some of that ag land into industrial property. But that's gone. I don't know what's caused that. We haven't looked at it, but it's there. Anyway, John and I and Kevin, I guess, will get together and talk about what we do in terms of looking at bringing on more members to the board under these circumstances.
Yes. How many applications have come in thus far?
Seven. The work session, I'll talk about the work session retreat. To me, that would be all tied in with this railroad presentation and open house and what we decide to do. I mean, I've jotted down a few items that I think we could work on, but I still, you know, I don't know how much work we want to put into these if it's going against the tide at this point in time, but we'll start working on that and go forward. And like I said, John and Kevin and I'll talk about how we proceed going forward to put on new members to the advisory board. I think we have to have some positive messages to go along with that to help push our agenda forward.
Well, I think, Eric's got to change his ways. And the only way I think that he can be nudged into changing his ways is, realize that if he's going to build this railroad out, he's going to have to do it with his own money, because I think the public money's kind of been cut off. And if he's willing to do it all with his money, I guess more power to him, but I don't think that was part of the Temple plan. Yes, sir.
I guess what I worry about is if this group is going to take a negative defeatist attitude, we've lost. It seems to me there's a good story to tell about the value of the railroad. It's got historic value. It's got economic value. This particular board, I think, needs to be an advocate for moving forward. And the fact that there's opposition out there shouldn't stop us from doing that.
Well, I think long-term, you're right. I think short-term, Eric trumps us.
Yeah, and as I told you, I mean, you haven't been directly involved in this as long as I have. I mean, I've been working on this for 20 years, and I've seen progress being made all along the way. And now we've, the waters are being poisoned at this point in time.
But it's going to be a big loss for the county. You know, if we give up, the railroad will probably go away.
I don't think the railroad can go away, can it?
Well, certainly, if it deteriorates north of Battleground and there's no money to repair it, what's going to happen?
Pretty well, north of Battleground.
And the county's going to get tired of it, tired of fighting the battle. If, you know, it's so easy to lose things, and it's so hard to protect them. You know, we saved an old church building out in Amboy, all volunteer effort. No, almost no help from anyone else. That would, we would lost a bit of the, lost a significant bit of the history of the county if we'd let that go. Well, I'd see this railroad as the same thing. It's part of the history of the county. It's, you know, started working on it before the state became a state.
Right.
And it has economic value. It's in line with where we should be going from an energy perspective. We should be protecting and building up our rail system. So I don't see why a group like this should give up, because we have a bunch of naysayers pushing back.
No, I'm not saying we should give up. I'm saying that we might need to think about how we go forward.
Yeah.
As opposed to, as we have done in the past, it may not be the best route. But we need to think about that and
well, really I do think we ought to put together a story of why it's important that the county retain.
And I'm still willing to work on that. That's something that we should work on. And like I said, I put together some ideas, and then I will further embellish that, and then I'll get something out to you folks, and then we can start working on that. But it's going to be a tougher pull than it was in the past, and it's primarily because previously we had Eric and us working in the same direction, and now we don't know what direction he's working in.
Yeah, I won't argue with you on that point.
I mean, you know, I've already written down, you know, and I've shared with Dan, you know, what it would take for Eric to get back in big races with the county. You know, there's like three changes to the contract he has to make. And if he does those, then he's back in good races. I don't know, you know, right today, I don't think he'd agree to it, but a few more months of this, and maybe he will. Yeah, maybe he
come in. Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
A couple of points. I've had some communications with both of you, and if anybody doubts that John and Dan are enthusiastic supporters of the railroad, I'll just let you know that that is just not accurate. I think what they are dealing with, though, is the situation right now where I would put it this way. I'm going to try to be somewhat kind here, in the sense that there are entities that not only some of them don't support the railroad, but other ones are cool in this regard. How long has it been? Have we heard the story that Clark County and Vancouver needs family wage jobs here, and it's almost a sin that people drive across the bridge to their jobs? How long have we heard that, and from what entities have we heard that from? And I would invite those entities, if any of them care to listen and think deeply about their positions, about what the opportunity is here for actually significantly, in a positive way, transforming this county to have family wage jobs here. Use the fact that there is that railroad overlay, this tremendous chunk of property, and those sub chunks that Jim supports out further, which could be future things along the same lines. And those entities that have been cool and have, I'll use the word, whined about no jobs here, think about getting on board and think deeply about their coolness or even their opposition to it and what it costs this county and how long that's been going on. And why don't we get to something that matters? And then the other thing that I was going to, it's a sort of a side thing, but you might consider, you said that you were writing down some points, Dan. One of the things that can be helpful is if you're likely to share those points about with John or with Jim, and because if you develop those points that you were describing, it can be helpful in terms of putting together a more articulate package and with a range of ideas that can help make those kinds of things that you were talking about even more effective, perhaps, if you'd like to consider that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's my spiel for the day.
I know we've mentioned this before, but John and I spent, 10 sessions with Greater Brush Prairie Group, and we addressed a number of issues that they brought up, and I'm not saying we convinced them, but we at least nullified some of those issues and said we would work with them to resolve those issues. One of the big issues, for instance, was traffic in and out of the Greater Brush Prairie area up around the golf course in particular. They only have one route out of there. And, there's crossings that could cut them off from even getting out of their area. So that was something that I was on this transportation fact-gathering group also, and I brought that up as a key point in the transportation issues going forward in Clark County, and that was there was a lot of uncontrolled crossings, particularly out in that area, that need to be taken care of and either reroute a road or put good crossings in there instead of just, the X sign on a post. And those are the kind of things that we need to work hand in hand with, because I never thought about it. I mean, yeah, I knew that the railroad went by there and right by those people, but never thought about the fact that there were uncontrolled crossings in that area that, they could get trapped in there if a train stopped or if they didn't happen to see a train and there was no flashing lights or a arm coming down to stop the traffic or the train. So anyway, we spent time with them and tried to nullify those things or agree that we would work on those issues with them as we go forward. And they ultimately ended up saying that they thought the track should be taken up and put a trail in. So it was a lot of time spent by John and I talking with those people, but it didn't end up with anything. In the long run. Now we've got Eric, and I know he's trying to develop this in his best interest. He's been 14 years at doing this, and he hasn't turned much of a profit out of it, and I can't blame him. As a businessman myself, I can't blame him for wanting to get business going for himself, but nonetheless, he's ticking off some people in the process, and I don't think that's the right thing to do, but I understand to some extent his motivation.
Randy or Doug, do you have Gordon Short? Yeah, they just fall into a pretty close. Has the downtown area promoted at all?
No.
Businesses come and go.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times restaurants change hands, but if you want some good tacos, head out there.
There's two restaurants, there's a restaurant bar, there's a restaurant that's changed hands. There's a store, the bank is closed, I think.
So we got a new gift shop.
There's a gift shop.
Yeah. But it's been pretty
stagnant.
Yeah.
Motel that was there years ago is an apartment.
Yeah.
There's some residential
expansion, there's a new subdivision going in, and another one that looks, additional one that looks like it's near, they're in the logging stage, I think it's gonna be another development, but it, you know, that isn't businesses, that's just people that are gonna commute to town somewhere.
So, I guess the question that I would have, I mean, obviously there, I thought there were some remarks about, emergency vehicles blocking crossings, things of that nature out there with all the, trains that we're gonna be running. Has there been any complaints on this railroad about block crossings?
No. I'm not aware of any.
Not that I'm aware of.
Not, at least in the last couple of years.
And on the federal side of the house, as long as I was here, I never saw a complaint come across my desk on this railroad about block crossings or emergency vehicles out there. Not one.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I mean, operationally on the railroad, now you're talking Eric here again, you're not talking me. Operationally on a railroad, I mean, even if you were hauling rock, you know, out of the pit on there, and I don't know what size the train would be, let's say even 20 cars, even at 10 miles an hour, you're not on a crossing very long. And if there's a place that a train has to stop on a regular basis, if it blocks a crossing, you can certainly adjust your operation so it doesn't block the crossing on there.
Well, here's what has happened, though, is that when they hear that you're going to increase and you're going to have 50 cars, let's say 50 cars a year coming down the track with rock in it, okay? The visualization is 50 cars at a time, not 50 cars strung out over the whole year. So it's all of a sudden they featured this 50 cars lined up there, and there's no way they're going to cross that road with 50 cars coming down the track. That's what's happening with the perception, and that's why I say what I suggested last meeting is that we develop some kind of a program to communicate with these people and let them know. That's the kind of thing you need to do.
Well, total agreement that we should.
That's changed now because, I mean, typically Eric's got a couple cars and an engine and that's it. You know, you can't block an ice cream truck, you know. But Granite's application says they're going to haul 1 million tons a year down by rail. So that's 30 cars a day, every day, year long.
But even at that, that's 30 cars a day. That volume is not, the volume is not that great.
And they're going to haul it to 78th and St. John.
Hey guys, can I make a comment? This is John.
Train going in each direction a day.
Yeah, it's just a single train.
There's a couple people online.
5 minutes at any given crossing.
Okay. This is John Hanson.
And then we also have Kim O'Hara with her hand up, so. Go ahead, John.
Hey, when I lived out in Iowa, I've lived in many rural communities in Iowa for 19 years. It's an educational process because the main line between Kansas City and Minneapolis went through our town. A quarter of the town was, three quarters of the town on one side, a quarter on the other. And that's the main line. So we had millions of cars go through there. And once or twice in 17 years, I had to call the railroad to get the cars because there's a federal regulation. You can't have a block intersection that's an important route for more than 15 minutes. So it's a more of an educational process to most of these people to understand how the railroad operates. The people in Battleground and some of these places, when I read this stuff in the paper, it's an educational process. What the revenue they're losing and how their taxes will go up on their houses if they don't get businesses. I'm hearing about that where I'm in right now, people complaining about their taxes going up in their houses. So it's, do we need a form of subcommittee to get some of this data put together and maybe print a letter, get this paper to print a letter and point out some of these views that are misconceptions of what is going on, so that people can understand the truth about what's going on. Because there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's, some of it's not necessarily the right stuff. That's all I have to say.
You know, and along with that too, when you're taking a look at this, you mentioned how many millions of tons if the mine goes through out there. Well, if that isn't captured by the railroad, that's going to move by highway. And that is, and I'll tell you, that will have a detrimental effect on the traffic.
It'll have far more environmental impact than the railroad would.
You want to see your roads turn to dust.
Yeah, and again, that's back to the what I suggested before, that we need to do this open house. But if we're saying one thing out of one side of our mouth and then Eric's doing something else, then we're kind of pushing the cart against the wind or something. That's all I'm saying. We need some clarity before we put a lot of effort into something that is going to be a tough thing to do, if not impossible. I'm not afraid to do a lot of work and do this. I've done it for over the past years, but you got to have some expectation that it's going to be fruitful.
And you got to expect people to listen. That's the hardest part, is getting them to come in with a semi-open mind. They might come in with their arms crossed, but at least their ears will be open, and then maybe you'll get through to them.
All right.
Do you guys want to schedule something then to talk about this further, like we talked about a work session or a retreat?
I think it's a little premature at this point.
Okay.
Do I get to say anything? Am I able to talk yet?
Yes.
Yeah, Kim, we'll switch over to public testimony here in a second if that's
okay.
The I'll end wait. Of the agenda
yeah,
items.
Fine. Yeah.
You ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Kim.
So I sat in on all of those meetings that Dan was there at and for the Greater Brush Prairie Neighborhood Association, and really appreciated that Dan even showed up for those to talk to us and tell us what he knew and what was going on. He was very honest. He was very open, and that was very appreciated. And we spent a lot of time out of those meetings coming up with the document that we produced and talking about the things that we talked about with Dan and how to mitigate some of the concerns. It did, in fact, turn out to be a lot more than just concerns about the railroad crossings. And we appreciated that Dan embraced that, because that was a big concern. But that wasn't the only concern that came out of those meetings. A lot of them were speaking about transparency and how much we knew and how much we didn't know, where the plan was going. There were so many pieces of information that nobody had, you know, and we keep hearing about all of the companies that want to relocate here and how great it will be. Well, we haven't had any concrete anything to actually research and say, yeah, that would be a great neighbor to have, you know, up on Legler land. We don't know any of that. None of that has ever been concretely shared. I use that word tongue in cheek. And here we are now, it comes down to, and what it looks like long-term, a lot of that is less important than getting to that rock on the quarry. And the concerns, the environmental concerns of a train coming down and having issues, yeah, maybe it is cheaper to transport it that way, but if you have an environmental disaster, that's a bigger deal. So there are more concerns than just railroad crossings and transparency. And John, you spoke of listening, that those guys or those people, I'm assuming it's people who don't see things the way that you guys are seeing them, they need to listen. We need to get them to listen. Listening is a two-way street. You need to hear also what the concerns are of us guys, the people that have this train sitting in our backyards. And when that train goes by my backyard with just the one car or maybe even the two cars heading up to the dairy, it shakes. The ground shakes. there's a lot of seismic activity, there's a lot of noise, there's the pollution, and now that the ties have been fixed on the tracks right outside my horse barn, that train does not slow down. It's moving pretty good through there. So there's even more vibration, because it used to slow way down because I guess the ties were not good. So it would slow way down, which, you know, wasn't as bad. But now that going through with one car, there's a lot. So I would hope that you expect us guys to listen. I would like you guys to hear us too. We're the ones with the train in our backyard, not you guys and not the counselors, not Councilor Medvigi or Belcott or Bowerman. None of them have the train in their backyard. We do. And we've got the agricultural land around us too. These are the things that matter. It's not just the railroad crossings or the pollution. It's all of those things. And we'd like that to be taken into consideration when you're trying to prepare these, whatever you're going to prepare for the public open house. Think about how we see it too. That's all.
Just as a comment to that, that's the whole objective of the open house, is that we get those comments out and can see how we can mitigate them. That would be my goal anyway.
But it's, it's not just mitigate them, Dan. It's hear them and understand them, that maybe they're not able to be mitigated. Maybe you can't make it. You can't unpave a road. You can't stop the pollution from coming out. You can't stop my house from shaking. That's what I'm saying, is these are not necessarily things that can be fixed. If this goes forward, these are things that we will be forced to live with. That's what I'm saying, is it's not, it may not be fixable. That's all I'm saying.
Understood.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to my soapbox.
Okay. Any other public comments?
Howdy, folks. So it certainly is one of those tough things.
Pardon me, sir. Could you state your name for the record?
Yes. My name's Nathaniel, or you can just call me Nate Boyd. I'm a volunteer at the Oregon Rail Heritage Center with the 700, as well as BYCX. Certainly one of the younger people, both as the volunteer there, but I'm certainly somebody who's kind of wanting to be the kind of taking on the mantle of helping to not just share the history of railroads, but also, you know, kind of be that bridge of communication as a younger face. You know, I have a lot to, of course, learn, but aside from that, as hearing all the comments, hearing the discussion, and certainly the buy-in that everything is, including the just a public comment, the toughest thing that anybody has when it comes to a plan of this scale or with entity that impacts so many other things, including the public side, is pleasing everybody, because unfortunately the reality is you can't please everybody. And then there's times where you have to choose between, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, what's the best of two evils. You know, it's definitely that prudence of, okay, we're going to try to be as transparent as we can be. That might mean fact-finding or doing whatever you can to go and say, all right, we've done our research on our end to at least do our best to answer the questions that the public may have. But at the same time, there's the challenge of being able to properly address every question, because there is the realistic challenge of, can we research everything there is to research to properly address the questions that we get? Because, you know, there's some that just don't have answers, which isn't great, because, yeah, the people who are asking those questions don't have the answers that they're looking for. And then there is a tough spot of, I don't have that answer. So it's a good discussion, and I think at least one can say the discussion's happening. so hopefully there's something that can come out of it. I guess that only moves me to my second thing of, in the time that I have found volunteering with an organization like ORF there in Portland, they have a unique situation, and I only bring this up just to see if maybe any of it's applicable to this situation, but part of a lot of the success that they've had as being kind of a young organization, being only like, I think, 12 years old or so in that location, they're kind of the hub of all these other excursion and preservation railroads, because a lot of the volunteers there also help out or involved or know people in all these other organizations. And in that kind of industry, you have to be, because since you're all volunteer, it's hard to survive on your own. And one of the things I think that they've got really unique and helps them out is that they've got support from a lot of different people all spread out through the state of Oregon. So they've been able to go and help solve problems that they've had that they couldn't solve in-house. One of our board president of ORF is actually the owner of the railroad down in Albany and Lebanon, the Albany and Eastern. And he's been a tremendous, you know, help to have, and somebody to have with a lot of resources, a lot of experience at his disposal. To have him on our board is quite an advantage. So I bring that up to wonder what kinds of people outside of Clark County or the PVJR or BYCX to kind of reach out to in terms of support to maybe hopefully answer the questions that the public might have, or, you know, have had similar instances of issues that they've had, and say, hey, we can provide some experience here because we've dealt with this at our railroad or in this, you know, other part of the state. Because I'm sure it's not a unique situation, and somebody somewhere has dealt with it. And again, I might have only 2 years with volunteering, but I have been very much aware of things, and I can see that having outside help really helps with a small little place, both with addressing things, both with getting exposure, and frankly, just the support, because the more people you have, the more people that you can make things happen. So that's all.
I've got another couple public comments. I'm Dave Rowe, and I do operate down in Lake Oswego with the Tourist Railroad when I'm at Short Trolley. But the point I want to make is that in the 90s, this railroad used to operate the train up to from Battleground up to the Falls, and that brought me to Battleground. That was thing that attracted me to Battleground, and there's a lot of things that a tourist railroad can do. It brings dollars to the county, and people will see how attractive Clark County is just by being a tourist railroad. So this is a point that we should make on our presentation, that this is a tourist railroad attraction other than just hauling freight. And the other thing I want to make is in the Columbia, they made an article that there is going to be 50 trains a day coming through, and the public read that. But it's not 50 trains a day, it's 50 cars a day, which may be two trains or maybe one train. So we need to make sure that the newspapers get the story right, that how many carloads is different than trains. Okay.
You know, just a comment that really it's the uniqueness of this railroad in the sense that it's owned by the county. It is a railroad, but it's owned by the county out here. And if it was solely a railroad out there, and I don't know what who the person's name was on there that, you know, mentioned the 30 cars a day and the vibration. if it was just a railroad out there, they're under no obligation to listen to that person or even try to mitigate the vibration or whatever on there. But, you know, at least you're here as part of the county to listen to what the person has, and maybe there is mitigation that can take place. I guess the frustrating point is we're still dealing with Eric, and, you know, that it's frustrating for me to think of that. But like I said, you are really in a unique position here to where you can listen to the people of Clark County. You know, if it's trails they want, well, why can't the railroad work in conjunction with the people with trails and make trails out there? And, you know, I think something like that could be done. And you're right, we probably should be listening more to the homeowner and things out there, that, you know, as far as what needs to be done. But once again, I fall back again. You know, you can't, it falls back to the asphalt scenario. Can you guarantee that this, well, I really couldn't get up in front of somebody and say, I'm going to guarantee that this is not going to happen. So I therefore wouldn't say it. But anyway, like I said, we are really in a unique position. Would be great to see us move forward. You know, who knows? Anyway.
Marvin Matheson, I live on the railroad, and I own the right of way, what little property I have had. I kind of looked forward to the railroad closing back many years back, because they said that seemed to be where things were headed. And I said, well, I can at least use my part of my property and just do an equestrian trail connection to what's going to happen. Well, the railroad stayed, and I was grateful, because I spent 55 years in the electrical industry, and the fact that we can move a major transformer without any permits within a short distance of any substation we've got, and we're vulnerable in our infrastructure to start with, but having that mobility is one of the things that's always overlooked. Maybe some of these ideas might be presented as well. Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Anybody else have comments, questions?
I guess I'd only say, and in some ways just on behalf for the public side, who's listening in, again, the other thing to keep in mind when it, and I'm not sure the situation with this particular railroad, but it's one of those things where having options and being able to discuss options while we have it, well, there is options on the table, is better than running into a situation where, you know, you find that you lose a lot of options to play with, and then, you know, you can find yourself in a corner. You know, it from both the railroad's end of saying, yeah, we've got a great thing here, and then on the public's end saying, yeah, we hear that, but we also have concerns, it's definitely going to be a kind of the challenge of meeting in the middle, so to speak, of being able to find a common ground or a compromise or whatnot. Because, you know, we've got some railroads that we've lost, like Port of Tillamook Bay, and part of that was natural causes, but, you know, the resulting kind of discussion afterwards that kind of put it to its grave. The challenge is once it's dead, it's really hard to revive it. And if you lose the right of way for whatever, and again, not sure how this railroad, how it applies, but it's the, once you lose, unlike, say, roads and infrastructure, where it's a little bit easier to rebuild, just for the public's awareness, at least, it just, it's a lot harder to restore rail service to a particular area. So even things like, hey, we want to add public transportation in any means or form to, you know, address, hey, we want to minimize environmental pollution or whatnot, that no longer becomes an option once the tracks are gone or once, you know. So there, while there's options on the table, it's certainly a great time to discuss how do we go forward versus we've lost opportunities or different ways to go about it, and now we are kind of in a corner. So, yeah, it's good that the discussion's happening.
Okay. Do I hear a motion for adjournment?
I'll second.
Anybody against adjournment? We're adjourned.